Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The governor's race is still on. Same-sex marriage is off the ballot, and some noticeable outsiders are getting involved in the Zulevi opposition campaign. This hour, we'll be discussing those and other stories with our reporters' roundtable. Joining us today is Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Welcome as always, Joe.
It's great to be here.
And Jackie Borchardt of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Welcome, Jackie.
Thanks for having me.
If anyone out there has a question or comment about state government or politics or something in the news, give us a call, 614-292-8513. So let's kick off with the governor's race. The sixth primary?
Sixth.
Looms. Chrissy Thompson, the pre-primary campaign finance reports are in, and as expected, as should be expected, incumbent Governor John Kasich is ahead, but he's way ahead. Paid media matters a lot in Ohio. Is Democratic challenger Ed Fitzgerald where he needs to be?
Well, he says he is. I think the fundraising gap is as far as cash on hand. So that's what they have in their campaign savings accounts, so to speak, is Governor Kasich has six times the amount of money as Ed Fitzgerald does. It's just a massive gap. And, you know, it's true that Kasich's popularity isn't as high as some incumbent governors would want it to be. He didn't win by a majority of the vote the last time. And Ed Fitzgerald continues to say we only need 77,000 votes. That's the number of votes that Kasich won by 4 years ago. So, if he can use his money wisely to target, people who might be able to bridge that gap for him, he could certainly have a shot. It's a very close close race polling wise, but he's very, very far behind in the money race.
Right, very close in the polls, but very far apart in spending. What Joe Ingles would be a strategic use of his money? Ed Fitzgerald is on radio. Mm-hmm. With one ad, I think. And John Kasich is on television a lot. During the playoff games, the Blue Jackets playoff games for one. And he's on a lot. And there's like varying. He's got, I think, a 15-second, a 30-second, and 40. I don't know, something longer than that. It seems long.
And if you look at the ads that John Kasich has out there so far, they are defining John Kasich. They're talking about, his roots, how he grew up. His parents and, his biographical kind of life. But they're also talking about how he cares about the poor, how he cares about people who haven't had successes in life and that sort of thing. And right now, when we see him on the trail, on the campaign trail, he's talking a lot about what he's done in areas to help drug-addicted people, which he's done quite a bit with that, shutting down pill mills in southern Ohio and, a lot of things that a lot of folks said needed to be done. So we're hearing a lot of that from John Kasich right now, and we're not hearing a lot from Ed Fitzgerald that seems to be targeted, or at least that's my sense. I hear Ed Fitzgerald reacting to various things that happen, but I'm not hearing a targeted message from him like I am from Governor Kasich. And I think he needs to get out there and he needs to, figure out, what he wants to talk about and establish his campaign and target his message, because he doesn't have much money. And that's going to be important to set the tone.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. Jackie Borchardt, the other thing about Ed Fitzgerald is a lot of people, even though the numbers are very close in the polls, they do not reflect that a lot of people know very much about Ed Fitzgerald at all. In fact, he has very little name recognition in the polls. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that the lack of name recognition shows that people are voting on Kasich. Mm-hmm. And, if they're in favor of what the governor's done, then they're going to say, oh, I'd cast my ballot for John Kasich. But if not, and I think there's still a lot left over from the fight over SB5 and some of the other policies.
SB5 being the would have abolished public collective bargaining for public employees, right?
And I think that there's some left over from that. And the question is, well, how much of that is from the 2011 battle, and can Kasich escape that? And I think his most recent ads show that he is looking forward and not looking back to that. And I haven't seen the Democrats really push the SB5 battle yet. Maybe that's still in their arsenal.
Still in the hopper.
Yeah, I went to a fundraiser that Fitzgerald held in, or someone held for him in Cincinnati this week. And he gave about a 10-minute speech, and he hit on, we were joking, the big five or six, you know, SB5, so that's labor, right? Mm-hmm. Sheldon Adelson, which is a very rich donor that Kasich went to visit.
Casino-owning billionaire in Las Vegas, Nevada, mm-hmm. right?
He hit on voting rights. And I'm forgetting some of the other
women's
two.
Women's issues, probably.
Jobs Ohio?
Yeah. No, he actually didn't hit on either of those. I'll tell you if I can remember a couple more. But anyway, he kind of, by the end, you know, he was an hour and a half late, and people were kind of grouchy. And by the end, he had people hooting and hollering because these are the things that will get his supporters to turn out. And he, right now, I think he's really just focused on those people who tend to vote Democratic, making sure that they show up, because if he's perceived as an underdog, they may not vote.
I remember there was a state government, a state office holder many, many, you know, 20 years ago that I knew from being in office, and thought, how would this person be like? How did they ever get elected? What would they be like in a campaign? And finally, I saw this person on the hustings, you know, in a campaign situation, and went, oh my gosh, I mean, they just got the crowd foaming at the mouth. What was Ed Fitzgerald like? What's he like on the campaign trail?
I was a little bit surprised because he tends to be a little bit long-winded and wonky when he talks to reporters. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, but he gives the kind of answers that people at editorial boards love, right? You dig really deep into the issues, talk quite a bit about it. Mm-hmm. He's quite knowledgeable and often when he's doing interviews, he doesn't focus on sound bites very much. So out on the campaign trail, though, he really was able to fire people up quite a bit. It was punchy. He just used the material that was that would have worked with those people, you know, very quickly. You know, if you had known that when you elected John Kasich that he would have done these things, you know, SB5, you know, bowing at the feet of Sheldon Adelson. You know, crimping voting rights, things like this that the Democrats like to hype up. And people were pretty excited. And he said, look, we only need 77,000 votes. We just need you to go talk to your neighbors. So
that's a hard thing. That's really hard, because if you look at the presidential elections in Ohio, there's one key thing that the presidential elections in Ohio have that works for Democrats that the midterms don't. And that is the young vote. I mean, we
turnout.
We see college students turning out in much larger numbers for the presidential
vote. Because they're just getting started with a semester, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right.
Now most of them are maybe gone home.
Well, you're talking the primary. But I mean, even in November, when it really counts, because I'll go ahead and predict that Ed Fitzgerald will win this primary, even though he does have
prediction.
A challenger.
Another bold move.
It's a bold move, but I'm there to do it. But so anyway, I think in the fall, though, it's still a tough sell to get younger people to understand government well enough to know why it matters to vote in the midterms. I know when I was younger, I'm not sure I understood that. You know, the presidential race is exciting because it's big, it's on TV, and everyone sees it, and you know, you feel all these ways it touches you. But really, the stuff that touches you in government is the stuff that's closer to you. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you understand that till you get to be a little older, paying taxes. And guess who those people are more likely to vote for?
And spoken like a true State House reporter, I might say, we always have felt very misunderstood. I know I did when I was a State House reporter. Why don't people care more? But they don't. And that hasn't changed much the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And this, there's not even expected to be an issue on the ballot in November that might fire up some of the demographics that Joe is talking about.
You know, two other things that he mentioned, I'm remembering now. One was cuts to local governments. And that is, when you just say it like that, I don't think that ordinary people understand, you know, people who aren't plugged into the day-to-day government.
Particularly young people who don't necessarily pay a lot in taxes yet.
Correct.
Or have even started paying much.
So if there's a levy,
they don't own a home,
exactly.
So they're not paying property
right.
tax. Yeah.
So So that's something that he's going to have to really work on. He likes to talk about raising taxes on seniors, which is there was a portion of the last budget that got rid of a property tax rollback for some senior citizens, wealthier senior citizens. So he likes to hit on that. That's something that might be able to make it understandable, but it's very difficult, I think, to communicate to people. It's kind of a lot of states don't even have this. When I moved here, it was like, why is the state sending money back to a local government? You know, that's just not a normal thing in some
places. That's a lot of, but what you just said, you know, you can even remember two of the things.
Just exactly what I wanted to ask
about. It's like a scattershot. It's just so much.
Is it too many issues?
How do you boil that down? And maybe at a rally with supporters, with party faithful who are maybe not completely in tune with these things, but I've heard the sound bites. It works to say, you know, property tax exemption and women's rights and, Jobs Ohio. Those people can get that, and that's why they get riled up. But I think if you put that same message in front of uninformed voters or undecided or those 70% that don't know who Fitzgerald is,
These were the 80 most plugged in Democrats in Cincinnati.
And you wrote about, last week, Chrissy, you wrote about Governor Kasich's reelection campaign, and it's released its second TV commercial last Tuesday, another bio ad, and the theme is "I lift Ohio through job creation." Mm-hmm. That's kind of lift all boats. Everybody gets that. You also made some distinctions that he wasn't, you broke down the ad.
Right. But either way you look at the numbers, I just wanted people to be clear. The governor likes to talk about private sector jobs. If you ask him about it, he says he just thinks that's a stronger measure of the economy. His job record doesn't look as good if you include public jobs, so people who work for the government. But in the same way, Ted Strickland's record doesn't look as bad if you look at it this way, at it that way either. Mm-hmm. So it's, kind of six of one, half dozen of the other.
But that overarching theme, the I lift.
That's
Ohio.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that, I don't know if Kasich came up with this word lift himself, but it's something that they've really leaned into. He would use it all the time in his off the cuff speeches, almost a little awkwardly, like lift doesn't seem to fit quite there, but they've really leaned into it and made it into a, something that he can talk about. His problem, he says, is that people associated him too much with Lehman Brothers the last time. And that was another thing that Ed Fitzgerald hit on at this campaign rally. But so they're trying to take this time where their opponent can't spend any money right now to go ahead and paint their own picture of who John Kasich is. So maybe, an incumbent usually doesn't have to do these kinds of biographical things. But he wants to say all these things you've been hearing here and there, about tax changes or local government funds or maybe things that sound negative. Well, this is actually all about job creation, he really does believe that what he's doing, is improving the economy for everyone.
But if you look at the narrative of the Democratic Party on this, they can also throw out numbers that show you that, Ohio is not as good as Governor Kasich makes it sound. They'll tell you that the job creation really doesn't exist in the numbers that Governor Kasich says it does. And they'll also point out a number of Ohioans who lack the security, job security and job, the kind of quality of job that would help them get ahead. If you have a lot of low income jobs out there that don't pay benefits and don't pay a living wage, you've got people working two or three jobs then sometimes to make ends meet. And, honestly, that's the factor. When it comes down to the end of the race, people kind of look at things and go, how do I feel? How do I feel right now? Am I happy? Am I happy with the way government's taking me? And then they make their decision on that versus all these numbers that, people throw out to try to convince you one way or another. So I think that's going to be a key issue coming into the fall is when voters take a hard look at where they are, they're going to say, am I better off or am I worse off?
We have our weekly reporters roundtable assembled here today. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We have our weekly reporters roundtable assembled today. If you have a question or comment for them about state government politics, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining me in the studio, Jackie Borchardt of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Just one thing before we get off the governor's race. Former Ohio Governor Ted Strickland started out negative 4 years ago. He lost by, 77,000 votes. A lot of people wonder if that was the wrong tack. It was somewhat unusual for a sitting governor to start out that way. It's much more usual for someone to start out with positive, biographical ads, regardless of when they start. Joe Ingles, what do you make of that 4 years ago? Do you think that kind of shaved some of those votes away?
Well, I think it really didn't resonate.
Turned off people.
That's it. It turned off people. It really didn't resonate. If you look at what he was trying to do at that point, we had had the debacle with the banks and the federal government, and we'd seen Wall Street basically fall apart, and taxpayers had to bail it out. And he was trying to make people didn't know Governor Kasich. They didn't know John Kasich at that point. So Governor Strickland was trying to define John Kasich before he could define himself. And so he was trying to make him part of the Wall Street crowd with those ads, and they were negative, but he was trying to make that link and make people doubt John Kasich. But the problem was that things weren't great in Ohio then either. Economically. So, people, it wasn't resonating with them. And let's face it, Wall Street, stockbrokers, financial
that
management.
That was resonating with them.
Woo! Man, I'm telling you, that's some hard stuff.
It was a calculated risk. It wasn't reckless necessarily.
Yeah. It was, it wasn't reckless, but what it was, it just didn't resonate because people couldn't understand it. And then, you've got Governor Kasich coming in with this, he was riding on the coattails of this investigation into the governor's mansion because there were some things happening there with the inmate program and people didn't know what was happening there.
Right.
You had all that going on too. There were a lot of different little skirmishes going on at the same time, and people, quite frankly, didn't know what to believe, I think, if you look at the polling.
Okay, let's move on. You mentioned there are no issues on the ballot in November, at least. Well, there won't be any issues, I guess, on the ballot. That's absolute. The big reason being,
well, I don't know. There might be a voting rights bill.
Okay, no, that's true.
Okay, that's right.
There,
right.
And there are those 3 or 4 or 5 medical marijuana petitions.
They're starting a new push, but they don't have the money for that. I'll make a bold prediction. Maybe they'll come up with it, but as of right now, they have not.
But the big draw, the gay marriage, the same-sex marriage ballot issue that would have overturned the standing ban on same-sex marriage in the state of Ohio, which was approved in 2004.
Right.
That's off the ballot now. Joe Ingles, it's officially off. What happened to Freedom Ohio's plan to buck the pro same-sex marriage establishment and go for it in November?
I think reality happened somewhere along there. If you look at the situation, Ian James, who is the leader of the group that was pushing the petition that would have put it on the ballot to allow voters to overturn Ohio's gay rights ban, it would have allowed, if that amendment would have passed, if the petition would have gotten on the ballot. Okay, let's start this over. If the issue would have made it to the ballot, and it would have gotten on there and passed, it would have allowed recognition of gay marriage from other states. It wouldn't have necessarily opened gay marriage in Ohio. It could have, but it would have allowed a religious exemption. There were some things going on, and there were a lot of questions about the wording of that petition by gay rights advocates because they said, you could run a truck through here with some of this wording, and it would allow for discrimination and other things. So Ian James, the leader, came out with a new petition, got new petition language that was clearer, that people liked a little better, had more support for it. But there's just not the time to get it, get the signatures needed, 380-some thousand valid signatures. And then there's also not the money. And some, there's also, if you look at the polling, there's not the willpower to put it forward before voters right now, because the campaigns that are educating voters on gay marriage say their work isn't done yet. So a significant portion of the community that would have been backing it, supporting it, they weren't ready to go for it this fall. And I think that realization kind of sunk in last week, and that's why we see what we have now. But we do have this petition that is being circulated out there by Ian James, and I think some of the other advocates as well will circulate this petition that could be put on the ballot in future years, either 15 or probably likely 16.
So does this mean that the pro-gay marriage groups are reconciling, that they're operating from the same playbook now, Jackie Borchardt?
I don't know if they're on the same playbook. The language they've both sides have used all along is that we're having discussions, and it's a conversation. And I think that, you know, this new language, when it came out, the Why Marriage Matters campaign, which is part of Equality Ohio, their campaign manager said he was pleased with the changes that were made. Not so much the language, but just that it shows that they are willing, Freedom Ohio is willing to reach a consensus with all groups. And instead of marching forward no matter what, we're going to slow down, we're going to listen to all the concerns and try and get everybody on board. Because I think for the reasons that Joe mentioned, the money and the polling, you know, the polling was almost there. The money was definitely not. And I think that in order for it to be successful in any year, you need to have the campaign. Because if you look back to 2004, when the same-sex marriage ban was on the ballot, then the money that was spent in favor of that was more than $2 million. And so there is going to be an opposition to this.
That's right.
Gay marriage. Mm-hmm. Amendment, yeah. Whenever it happens, there's going to be an opposition. And Freedom Ohio did not have that kind of money.
Right.
They are, so that this Freedom Ohio group, which is just an Ohio-only group, is not aligned with any of the national groups, which the kind of wait and do it in a couple of years people are aligned with the national groups. And that is really where all the money is. Ohio is a really big deal, and they're going to have, you know, one shot to do this, and they're going to get a lot of national money, and everyone needs to be on the same page in order for that to happen. Because once the campaigning starts, they're going to say things that, you know, that the other side wants to maintain the gay marriage ban, is going to say things that, you know, will be persuasive and will sway people. You know, that's why people campaign for these things, right? So to have an empty vacuum poll that says, like, oh, you're basically almost there, 50%-ish, maybe plus or minus a couple, you know, it's just not probably enough. But without, you need a lot of money, and you need a little bit more public support to withstand that.
They have done a lot of work in the last 2 years on the first petition in growing their organization. The fact that they don't have millions of dollars, or that they're linked up with a national organization, I think, and still able to get 60,000 volunteers in their database is incredible. And I think it speaks volumes to, one, the issue, and two, just how passionate people are in Ohio about this issue.
Yeah, but you got to remember, the courts recently have been doing a lot of the heavy lifting on this issue. The courts have been coming out and saying, yes, you can put the both parents, gay parents, on the birth certificate. Mm-hmm. In the case, the most recent case, we have the death certificate case. We have the federal judges coming out in other states on this issue. And as they come out and do these, you know, individually rule on these cases in favor of gay rights, every time that happens, there's a little more education that comes about in the process. And people are looking at it and saying, well, I'm reading this article and I never really thought of that. You know, that's something that wasn't there before. We also see more people who are saying they know gay couples. And that's a big thing, because, you know, if you look at the polling substantially from 2004 to now, the number of people who know gay couples, it's skyrocketed. And I believe it was above 80% in the
last
poll.
Makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference.
And every year there's a new batch of 18-year-olds who can vote, and they tend to at much higher percentage rate of number of them will tend to support it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So how does having same-sex marriage off the ballot in November affect anything else or not?
I think it would have given a little boost to the Democratic candidates just because looking at from Joe was saying earlier from the college students' perspective, they don't really have a, you know, they may live in Ohio. They may have lived here for 4 years already, but maybe not feeling enough like they need to go out and support a gubernatorial candidate. They might leave the state in, you know, 9 months later to go get their first job, where an issue like gay marriage is such a big national issue. And a big issue among young people, as you just said, and I think that it would have inspired some of that college-age group to go and vote, at least for that. And, you know, that would be at the bottom of the ticket. So they would have to go through everything else before getting there.
Hmm. Yeah, that would have helped them, I think, a little bit. There really isn't a statewide issue on the ballot that speaks to that group now. So basically, you're going to have the Democratic Party is going to have an uphill battle trying to get that group out to vote because, you know, like Jackie said, a lot of them don't even stay here after they graduate college. They move on and go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think the voting rights amendment, if it were to get on the ballot, would provide a boost to the Democratic Party. Urban Democratic voters, which often are African-American people of color, they are less reliable voters in non-presidential years. And so having something like that on the ballot, I think, would help the Democrats, would help Fitzgerald, for instance. But again, it remains to be seen. That group doesn't have a lot of money either, but has a lot of grassroots support. So it remains to be seen whether they're going to get enough signatures to get on.
Okay, listeners, are you thumbs up, thumbs down on taking the same-sex marriage issue off the ballot, at least for the time being, in November? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Let's talk a little bit about the Columbus Zoo levy.
That was a rough segue there.
It was. This group focus, well, we now have, the Koch brothers are helping fund at least a mail campaign in Franklin County, among a certain segment of Franklin County voters, not everybody, but a certain segment of them, opposing the Columbus Zoo levy. This group focuses most of its energy on Obamacare. Why does it care about the Columbus Zoo?
Well, the group Americans for Prosperity said that they were contacted by some local, Franklin County citizens who had said that the con side of the levy proposal was not being heard enough, whether in the papers or just even on the signs that people put in their yard. So this group has, you know, it's a national group, but they have had a state presence now for 2 years or so. Mm-hmm. And so they do have a lot more resources than just a group of people.
And they are more plugged into the state than maybe people realize.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have been very active honestly, their big issue in the past year has been opposing Medicaid expansion. And that's still their big issue nationally is anything related to healthcare, Obamacare. But they have developed a huge grassroots network through their efforts to oppose Medicaid expansion, and that's something that they might be able to leverage for this.
And this issue already had opposition on the ground well before the Koch brothers came on the scene.
But not a lot of money.
Not a lot of money, but they had well-organized opposition. And that makes a difference because, you know, the Koch brothers can come in here, put some money into it, and all of a sudden you have a campaign. And we're seeing, if you look at the different sides of this issue, we're seeing a lot of people speaking out against it, where I can't remember a time in the past when the zoo levies come up that we've seen that level of opposition.
What are people saying up in Delaware County, Joe Ingles?
Well, I think it's a
where
different...
Where you hang out?
Yeah. It's a different thing. You know, I think there is a little resentment at the way that what we're hearing from Franklin County is, oh, the zoo's in Delaware County, and those people don't pay for the zoo, and those people should be paying for the zoo, and kind of painting Delaware County as freeloaders. And I think that, you know, while Delaware County does not have a property tax that supports a zoo, if you look at the county and talk to most people up there, they have zoo passes, a voluntary membership that they pay for. If you also look at where the zoo is situated, it's in Liberty Township, Powell area. So those taxpayers that support the safety services there in that area, they also support the zoo. And that's a considerable draw. If you look over at the zoo and the number of runs made by police and fire, that's a lot. And also, if you look at the land that the zoo sits on, it could bring in $7 million or more. Depending, well, you know, those are floating numbers. Yeah.
But put three Tuttle Malls
right.
As if anyone would put three Tuttle Malls there. Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah.
Go on.
Okay. Let's even reduce that down to $5 million. But the zoo is sitting on valuable land in a valuable location that could, because the zoo's nonprofit, it's not paying taxes.
Right.
But if the zoo, if it weren't there and there were something that were, retail oriented that was paying taxes, we're losing that tax money. So in the local economy in Delaware. So, but that being said, I think people in Delaware generally like the zoo. I haven't heard anyone in my circle of friends who says, I don't like the zoo. Mm-hmm. They don't like being painted as freeloaders,
mm-hmm.
however.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that given the thrust of unreal regionalism and the idea of cooperation among governments, particularly townships and cities and that sort of thing, that there still is a state law that prohibits a levy from being going on a ballot between two counties. So they can't, the zoo, since it's located in Franklin County technically, cannot levy another county.
Yeah, well, that's, you brought up a good point. It's kind of in Franklin County, but it's also in Delaware County, and it has been
technically Franklin County because the city of Columbus annexed it.
Right, exactly.
Oh, really?
But
mm-hmm.
it has been used as a way to a conduit to get what Columbus and Franklin County wants, and that's another sore subject. People who are around who have been here for 20 years might recognize the word Bell Point. Bell Point was a huge water fight between the city of Columbus and Delaware County. And the zoo was used as a way to get up there and get water for Franklin County, which helps keep the Columbus water bills low. So, giving that water down there to Franklin County was a good thing for Franklin County. However, it was a controversial issue up in Delaware County because you were coming in, you were taking people's land, you were affecting the topography. A lot of different things up there. It was manhandling.
I would be interested in, I hope you have a listener right now who opposes the zoo levy and would want to call in. Because now we were joking, I was on another public affairs show and we were disclosing our zoo membership. So I am a zoo member and I also live in Delaware County, a little farther from the zoo than Joe does. But I find it hard to believe that Franklin County residents really think that they're not, that Franklin County is not benefiting from the zoo. But I do know that, voters just voted down by a very wide margin that Columbus Schools
for the first time,
levy.
Right?
And mm-hmm. and I think there's just a little bit of pushback of really you're trying to increase our property taxes again. And the zoo is making a big ask.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not a continuing, it's
right.
a permanent, which means doesn't mean that they can't revoke the levy down in the future at some point, but it's a long-term levy and it's a lot of money.
And they have said that they're trying to get, that this is the this is all they'll need. They're going to ask for everything they need, And so they're asking for more than you would think that they would need right now because they're thinking long-term. This is what they say, right? But it's, in the climate that we have right now, I think it is a big ask.
Okay. I see some that maybe we have some people who want to talk about the zoo levy a little bit more. We will when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We have our weekly reporter roundtable on hand, Jackie Borchardt of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer. We've been talking about the Columbus Zoo levy. It's getting some interest from a national group funded by the Koch brothers, the big billionaires that everyone seems to be so familiar with these days. If you have a question or comment for the group, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Curtis in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Curtis.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I listened to your show last week when you talked about the zoo levy, and yeah. One of your guests, you know, said it's just 43 cents a week. And I think every time we look at taxes, everybody tries to take that path. Like, it's just pennies, you know, pennies. So why can't we just absorb this? And I'm a big supporter of the zoo. I have a zoo membership. And I think that's how the zoo should be supported, by the people that go to the zoo. Not, you know, we're taxed for the fifth, one of the top five highest taxed counties in the U.S.
That's
I think
true.
Enough is enough. Pennies adds up to dollars.
Okay. Thank you, Curtis.
Thanks.
It sounds like Curtis is making the point that I think someone else made earlier, that people are just getting, it's pushback.
Mm-hmm.
They're just tired mm-hmm. of the taxing.
Mm-hmm.
And that Columbus's property taxes are already pretty high, especially compared to cities of our size.
Yeah, and I think Curtis brings up an interesting point, which is, and I was just saying in our break, that for my husband and I, the zoo membership pays for itself in two visits. Should it be more? You know, should it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I think the zoo memberships are very attractive to families. It's a very inexpensive way to entertain yourself. But we've got to remember, Columbus doesn't necessarily have the best transportation. So if you live down in the middle of downtown and you're trying to get up to the zoo and spend a day up there and then get back, I mean, you're limited on your bus schedule as to how much time you can spend there. And so it might be easier for people, because of transportation, to do other things if they live in Columbus, even though the opportunity for the zoo is there, and it can be very cost effective if you have a membership.
Yeah, okay. I know we had some out of town guests last summer, and they were really excited to go to the zoo, and they were a little bummed out to see that it was so far north of the city where they were staying downtown. And, you know, considered taking a bus up there, but you really can't. I mean, if you look at the bus schedule, it takes you so far. And then, you know, Google Maps tells you to take a taxi the rest of the way. It's not convenient if you live downtown. And even though it's really not that far by car, but it feels really far, especially if you don't really, you know, leave your neighborhood too much.
Well, or think if you're on the east side of Columbus in one of those, you know, in a suburb over there, that would be quite a hike.
Or in Grove City.
Yeah. And, you know, Joe and I know, man, Delaware County has some serious traffic problems.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
Who cares if you can't? I mean, if you have your own car, it might be a real hassle.
Yeah. Even if you live around the corner from the zoo, it might be a traffic hassle at times. Just think wild lights. So you don't go anywhere when that's going on.
John in Worthington, you disagree that Delaware pays its fair share. Welcome to the show, John.
Yes, I would just like to say I think that Delaware and Union County both benefit highly from the zoo, from the development and everything up there. And I'd be concerned at what if would they pay or would they not?
Would we pay? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear John there. What was the last part of your question, John?
Well, would the people in Delaware and Union vote for the levy if they were asked to?
I don't know. I don't know that we've seen any polling on that. I did outline some of the reasons why people up there, you know, feel like they're already paying somewhat for the zoo. Would they pay on a property tax levy? That's a good question. As I pointed out, a lot of people up there have zoo memberships, so voluntarily they're paying already because they like the zoo. And I don't think, I've never heard anyone say they don't like the zoo. Whether they'll pay is another question.
Hmm. Okay, John, thanks a lot. Rick in Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
No, I'm very curious to. I would be very curious to see what would happen to the support for the levy if they would give up the idea of the downtown expansion.
Mm-hmm.
I've been involved in a lot of projects. I work in industry, and a project like that, beyond the cost of just building it, that just the cost of operating it over years, I really don't think that cost is captured in this levy. And for them to think they're not going to come back and need more, I don't think that's realistic. I love the zoo. I think it's awesome. I'm probably going to vote for the levy. I don't think it's a big levy. I don't think it's outrageous. I don't think it's over the top. But I think the downtown expansion is not well thought out. And frankly, I think it's a little harebrained. And I wonder what would happen to the support for the levy if that idea were scrapped. My feeling is that the support would go up quite a bit.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks.
Yeah, what about that? I mean, they're trying to bring it home to Columbus. We've been talking about how people have to travel. And they're saying, yeah, we want to bring it home to Columbus. We want to make that happen for people.
Right, right. But one of the things I've heard them say is that they would start having more corporate events at the downtown location, so it would be more centrally located for everyone. I wonder where that comes from. Is that the zoo that's thought, oh, wait, we could do better if it was more centrally located, if we put those corporate events downtown? And do they have numbers that show that there would be more support for zoo programming if they could hold those corporate events downtown? I don't know. But you've got that northern corridor. I can tell you from driving it every day, there are a whole lot of people up there who live up there who come to downtown every day commuting anyway. And when I go to the zoo for different events, I don't see a shortage of people. And sometimes it's the crowd is just, you know, you've been to the zoo when it's super crowded with their events, and it's it gets a little crazy over there. So, you know, I would like to see the numbers on that, and hopefully the zoo folks will come through with some numbers to show us that could be lucrative, more lucrative.
Yeah, I agree with Joe. I think that's still a gray area for a lot of people who are seriously considering the levy. And, you know, what is this downtown zoo extension? You know, they've said it's not a full zoo. You're not going to have, you know, gorillas running around downtown if they get out, you know. You know, it's not going to happen like that, but
small comfort to the people in Powell,
right?
You know,
right.
Where they will have gorillas over here,
right? But you know, what kind of events is this place going to have, and you know, what kind of animals are they going to have, and what is the purpose, and how does that fit into the whole zoo as a system? You know, other cities do this where they have an extension or a, you know, a new mm-hmm. or an expansion elsewhere. Usually it's out to the suburbs somewhere. And so, you know, can downtown support this? Can sustain it? Are you going to have enough foot traffic? What about the neighbors? It's just, there's a lot of details that aren't, as a former downtown resident, there's just a lot of details that haven't been worked out.
Right. Yeah.
And they say that, you know, it's just going to be a small portion. This levy is mostly for the main zoo operations. But then, like, your caller just brought up, you know, what happens then in the future? If this gets bigger than they anticipate.
That's true. The fact that, I mean, I just remember so much hearing, even as we discuss some of these local government cuts and the tax increases that some governments are having to put forth, people remember that there was a promise on some of these old taxes that they phased out that you know, we won't be...
won't come back again.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And
never say never.
So, yeah, I mean, what if 20 years from now? I mean, I know Jackie and I and Joe will remember that they said that this was it, right? So, you know, maybe they'll come to Delaware County at that point in time and avoid Franklin County.
Well, the zoo remains a hot topic, no question about that. I want to bring up something that was an issue back during the last election. It's an email from Chuck. He says, in the last governor's election, Governor Kasich was against taking federal money for a passenger rail line from Cincinnati to Columbus and Cleveland. And subsequently, we lost that money, which went to another state that is building their rail line. There is a new push to create a passenger line from Chicago through Fort Wayne and Columbus, which would again spur development and jobs to Ohio. One of the reasons for young college graduates leaving Ohio, and particularly central Ohio, is a lack of alternative transportation. Kasich seems more interested in building more roads. Is there any chatter on the election talk about rail transportation in Ohio? Now, this was something that Governor Strickland at the time did not push. His administration supported it, mm-hmm. but they didn't make an issue of it.
Right, right. And, you know, if you look at that plan would have connected Columbus and would have connected it with Cleveland and Cincinnati.
Which is already connected to Chicago.
Right. And but it would have run, the hours that the train would have run, the way it would have run, basically if you would have gone to a tribe game from Columbus, you would have had to stay all night and then come back the next day. You wouldn't have been able to actually get on the train and then get back, depending on the time of the game. So, you know, a lot of people looked at it and they said, now, would I use that? Thinking not. So I'm against it. You know, that we had a lot of that coming down at election time. And people were picking apart the roots of the plan, the details of the plan, not the idea of public transportation in general, though. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Would there have been more support if the route had been different? If there would have been more suburban city connectivity? If there would have been, you know, some other kind of multimodal programs that would have been invested in it. I don't know. But back then, I think a lot of it was coming down to the details of it, just much like the zoo levy, actually.
Not enough information.
People felt like they just didn't, you know, they wouldn't use it. And therefore, you know, they didn't want a part of it. They didn't want to pay for it.
We have a few minutes left. Chrissy Thompson, what are you covering this week?
I know that all three of us are enjoying just a little bit of
the
last week of the legislature's spring break. Okay. So a couple things. State Senator Eric Kearney from Cincinnati.
Former running mate briefly.
That's right. That's how your listeners will remember him. He always does a walk from Cincinnati to Columbus, and this is his last year in the State House. And so over the last few days, he has been walking from Cleveland to Cincinnati, and he is due to arrive at the State House at 6:30 today, assuming that he isn't too rain logged. So I'm hoping he can make it by 6:30. So run, yeah. Eric, run. But so that'll be something that I'm going to catch up with him on.
And Joe Ingles?
Well, we're following up, looking at the fallout from last week, all the different things that happened. We'll be keeping up on that and also looking forward to some of the new things that we're seeing coming down the pike. When the legislature comes back, they're going to be busy. They're going to be busy with this MBR. They're going to be busy with, you know, trying to deal with
the budget updating legislation.
Yeah, appropriations, what they're going to spend money on. So we're watching that right now.
All right. And Jackie Borchardt?
Yeah, like what Joe just said, you know, the Senate now will be working on that big package of bills. And there's still a lot of loose ends, I think, that weren't covered the last time, as there are when you have more than 1,000 pages of legislation passed in one day. So definitely, you know, digging deeper into that, that's kind of the luxury that we get when the lawmakers are out of town. Mm-hmm. But I'm also working with my colleague Jeremy Pelzer on our next Follow the Money story in our investigative series on where the money goes at the State House and what happens.
I think none of us should forget also that the primary is a week from tomorrow.
We will be talking about that.
And we have several hot primaries in Southwest Ohio, a lot of Republicans being challenged from the right. And we have one primary. I'll have a story on tomorrow, six-way primary for Eric Kearney's seat, Democrats. And there's some controversial issues there. So,
all right. Chrissy Thompson, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
That's Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Jackie Borchardt of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. We'll look for those stories. Thanks, Jackie. And Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Joe, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.